next on Girlfriend.
Nobody ever feels good and says, gee whiz, I'm so glad I got angry. Jealousy tends to melt away in the awareness of the enormity that we truly are.
Welcome to Girlfriend, Relationship Radio Rebooted, with your host, hypnosis practitioner and full-time psychic, Cynthia Chavan. Also in the studio today, John Miles, certified practitioner of hypnosis and NLP. He's also Cynthia's husband. I'm Jeff Newman for BDGX.com, your online listening experience. As always, we thank you for clicking on us. Today on Girlfriend, a broad subject, but we're going to dig deep. It's called jealousy. Also later on the program, building blocks for better relationships. Today's building block, objective viewer. And I'm as curious as you to find out what that's all about. Okay, the question of the day, are you jealous? If so, do you know why? And Cynthia is here to talk about that and dissect the word, because I think all of us have either felt it or have certainly experienced it and have seen it in action. Jealousy, Cynthia. Is that something natural to the human spirit?
Well, natural, but lots of things are natural. They're not necessarily necessary. So natural and necessary are two different things. So it's not a necessity to have jealousy, but it's natural to have jealousy. And once one is secure in the fact that it's natural, it becomes unnecessary. Because when we feel like we're doing something unnatural or something that we have to stop or control or get rid of, it becomes larger and larger and larger, because every component of us has a very good positive reason for being there.
Jealousy for, say, the teenager in their first relationship, is this compelling, sometimes uncontrollable, instinctual feeling. I mean, I remember it as a 12-year-old.
Right.
I might have been jealous of someone watching the same, you know.
It's an interesting point you bring up, because you remember it as a 12-year-old. Maybe that's a 12-year-old emotion. Yeah, you know, I had it. I remember it very specifically. I remember it very clearly. But when we have it today, we have it now. Does that mean we're 12 when we have it?
Well, there's that 12-year-old in all of us at all
times. Of course. But let's talk about what I honestly believe jealousy is, which is just a feeling of being on the outside of something. You know, when you feel excluded, people get jealous. And when we feel included, we feel accepted. And we get jealous of what we think excludes us, whether that's another individual, certain circumstances, situations, siblings, you name it. So to me, jealousy means a person feeling on the outside of acceptance.
Is that jealousy or is that envy?
Is that semantics? I mean, aren't they kind of the same thing?
I can be envious of someone and respect. I'm envious of the talent and career of Michael Jordan. I'm envious.
That's hunky-dunky dory. When you're looking at something and you're going, gee whiz, I would like to be that, versus I would like to usurp that from another individual.
That's jealousy.
Jealousy to me is something that you wish to usurp versus to aspire to.
Right. So jealousy is something she wants to take away the boy. Wants to take away the boy from her girlfriend.
Correct.
Envy is something that it's aspirational, but in a sort of a bent way.
No, it's not really aspirational.
Well, not to play semantics, but envy in the workplace. Okay, there's a very successful executive. I'm envious of his place in the company and what he has done with a career. I'm envious of that. I'm not necessarily jealous of that.
Correct.
But I might be jealous of an opportunity that one of my other contemporaries might have had. That's a natural feeling. I can't imagine that it's not. Talk to us a little bit.
Are you sure it's jealousy or envy? Do you want to knock him off his spot? Do you want to take his place?
Yes.
Are you? Well, okay.
His honesty today.
It's all right, but it's because you feel it on the outside. You weren't included. You weren't accepted. You weren't chosen. And when we don't feel included, accepted, or chosen, then jealousy comes up. It's a survival technique. We go into, I need to survive, so therefore I have to hit somebody else in the head in order to take their place, to usurp their place, so that I can take their place and I'm safe. Mm-hmm. However, it does come from a lack of security, a lack of knowledge of yourself, feeling good, feeling true to yourself, having your own identity, your own value intact. So it's not a aspirational situation, it's a survival situation. And when you're in we're people that are actually built with a big picture that are focused on a small issue of survival, which then, of course, brings up envy, jealousy. Well, envy, if you're labeling envy of something to aspire to, even that can be, you know, somewhat hazardous, because the person you're aspiring to be may not be the ideal individual that you are.
I'm going to break
and
it down.
They're both externalized, too, mm-hmm. as opposed to aspiring to being who you are as an individual in the audience.
Right. Understood, but Your authentic self.
I will challenge you on one thing, and I don't think...
You always do.
For the most part, I don't think jealousy is a survival instinct. I think it's a desire and sometimes selfishness. Because just break it down to something basic. The jealous housewife.
Right.
Or the jealous boyfriend.
Right.
And the reasons why. That's not survival. That's because that's something I want that someone else is going after.
Right. It's survival
because it's emotional survival. It doesn't have to be physical survival. You can have emotional survival, intellectual survival, mental survival. It's a measure of I need to be accepted in some form, shape, in order for me to feel safe.
I'm going to survive without that girl, but I desire to have her. That's why I'm calling. And then again, it might be semantics, but that's a desire I have.
Right.
And the jealousy is this instilled feeling that I have because someone else wants her and may get her instead of me.
I think survival can be an emotional survival of annihilation. Mm-hmm. There's a couple levels mm-hmm. of survival there. Emotional survival is also part of the deal.
Absolutely.
And there's different levels of jealousy.
And emotional survival, intellectual survival. Yes.
Okay, which is understood. Now, how does one deal with it?
As we do with anything, you have to get back to the root of the situation of what causes the jealousy. When one is feeling inferior or on the outside of a universe, unaccepted or betrayed as different or put aside, one fights to get into there. But if you actually look at yourself and you feel yourself and you know your divinity, you know your value, you know who you are, then what is there to be jealous of? Jealousy tends to melt away in the awareness of the enormity that we truly are. We focus on the smallness of ourselves instead of the largeness of ourselves. But when you put a light on the room, the cracks and the surfaces and everything starts to be able, it's not hidden anymore. So I look at jealousy as not necessarily something that was derogatory, but something that you can grow out of by an awareness of your larger aspects, awareness of your greater power, awareness of your true divinity, awareness of your true value. That your value is not lying in the acceptance of other individuals, but the acceptance of yourself.
Where a lot of my contemporaries have had to deal with jealousy is dealing with their kids and the social situations and peer groups and pressures that they have within these little cliques. What you just said makes a whole lot of sense.
Right.
It's very cerebral, though, and I don't know that a 15-year-old mm-hmm. might get
it. They do. They're actually more pliable than us. I've dealt with kids anywhere from even as young as 8 and 9 and 10 and 12, and they get it. When you explain it to them and you bring an awareness that they are bigger than the experience that they are presently having and that they're actually putting input into having that experience by having a reaction to it, they take to it like a duck to water. It's people that have had experience that lay on top of experience. It's like paint. The more paint you got on the house, the harder it is to get down to the surface. Well, with kids, they're more pliable because they are looking to absorb. And they're either going to absorb old patterns that they came in with, new patterns that they saw in the family familiar, or they will absorb new information from other individuals. And it's not hard. You can explain it to them. You can say, you know, the experience does not make you. You create your experience.
You have to be mature enough to accept and comprehend that. And honestly, I don't know
that a kid
will. Even
with 8-year-olds, you can't. I
know you can.
Yeah.
I know it's possible. I'm just...
The key might be here, the difference might be the parent to the child has a different role than
an
external. Because Cynthia's talked to other people's children.
Right. Yes.
Right? She'll bring them in for a hypnosis session or just having a conversation in whatever.
To help them.
To help them. And kids are extremely creative in NLP and hypnosis sessions or just in general conversation because it doesn't come from dad.
Mm-hmm.
So how does he get around dad?
Could come from an outside resource.
Maybe this is sort of like some way where he could engage with his children to say, take me out of being your dad and pretend that I'm somebody else. And that mm-hmm. way, sort of using imagination to end around the block that they might have information coming from dad.
That's very true. Or you can introduce them to other people's thoughts and books and use metaphor. Metaphor works very good with kids. kids, telling them a story. We hypnotize them all the time with stories. Might as well pick the story that frames them as unique, valuable, independent.
Well, I know one thing not to say, and never, and this is my bit of advice to anyone listening, never start a sentence with, when I was your age.
Oh, absolutely.
That just, there's the off button right there. I don't want to veer off subject too much, but you mentioned hypnosis, and I know that you both are practitioners. Have you used hypnosis, not specifically for jealousy, but for someone under the age of 12?
Yes, I have.
And how did that work? And if you can't be specific, at least be general about what you were dealing with.
It was excellent. I had a little boy, and I think he's about maybe 9 or 10, and he was having trouble sleeping with nightmares. And we went in, and we used creative visualization. A hypnotic session is not necessarily one where you have to go all the way out. You can go into a kind of a trance state where you're kind of like watching television. You're there, you're alert, but you're not terribly connected to your environment. So we used a rather light trance state and did creative visualization, and he sleeps like a rock now. I'm not saying he doesn't have an occasional nightmare.
Right.
You know, that's natural. But as a general rule, he has no problem sleeping anymore. He also worked on taking tests because he had a lot of anxiety about taking tests. And there was a school test that came up, performance tests, and it was scheduled, and so he came in and to have a relaxed environment when he went in to take the test, because then you can absorb more.
Now, just to be clear, you can go to our website. Cynthia's website is www.cynthiachauvin.com. That's CynthiaChauvin. On there is a hypnosis FAQ, also some testimonials from moms that have brought their kids in. When hypnosis or NLP is done with a child, the mom's in the room.
Yes.
So that's something that the children, the mom brings the kid in to deal with the issue using this technique.
So let's get back to your teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with teenagers, what I would suggest is to inspire, and when I suggest this to all mothers and all fathers of all children of all ages, is to help children begin to think for themselves versus mimic or express themselves through other people's opinions. Ask them what it means to them, engage them, and then give them metaphor to stretch their reality. So I wanted to actually give you a technique versus it can be done. If you enlist their information, you talk to them, you say, you know, what does that mean to you? What, you know, how do you do without a recourse or a judgment in the conversation as to why they do things, and then take the information and stretch it just a wee bit about, well, you know, why don't you think about this? This is possible. You know, maybe the experience is happening because of your participation versus the experience is there, and you're reacting to it. Maybe you have more power in your life than what you know. And you just leave things down the line. They will grasp, they will dig, they will fertilize, and they will finalize a different opinion about their environment. And it works quite well.
You're listening to Girlfriend. It's Relationship Radio Rebooted. You can listen here at BDGX.com, or you can listen to the show at Cynthia's website. As John just said, www.cynthiachauvin.com. That's Cynthia, CHAUVIN.com. You can also subscribe to the Girlfriend podcast on iTunes, which I just did, and that is exciting. So you can listen to this whenever you want. Coming up on Girlfriend, we have building blocks for better relationships, and this week it's called Objective Viewer, and that has piqued my interest. We'll do that in just a moment. You're listening to BDGX.com. Welcome back to Girlfriend on BDGX.com. This is Jeff Newman. Of course, we're visiting every week with Cynthia Chauvin and her husband, John Miles. Joining us in the conversation right now is a local Washington, D.C. businesswoman. Her name is Keisha Merritt. Welcome, Keisha.
Hello.
Good to have you here. Keisha's in listening earlier. We were talking about jealousy, jealousy in the workplace, jealousy in the home, jealousy in relationships. Can you just talk a little bit about jealousy? How has it affected you, or how have you seen it affect others in relationships? And perhaps you have a question for Cynthia.
Well, it has affected me greatly from a business standpoint. Being a black professional female in the music business, there's a lot of jealousy with males. There's a lot of jealousy with other women. There's a lot of jealousy from a professional level. Then there's the, but I do, one thing that you all were speaking about earlier was the envy. There is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. There's envy that I have for other people in my industry where I'm envious of the level that they're at, so I'm aspiring to get to that level, so I'm continuously working. Mm-hmm. But then there's the jealousy side, which I typically don't have, but I see from others that being in the position that I'm in or some of the resources that I have, I see that others kind of, as they say, kind of hate, or they do things to try to crash and burn situations for me or for people kind of in my lane, where that jealousy becomes the worst case of envy, where it's like jealousy to the 10th power. So I totally understand.
They get aggressive.
Yeah, they get aggressive with that. So it's really hard, especially for a female, to deal with when you have those two different lines. Envy, I love that all day, every day. Jealousy, that's when it's kind of like that thin line, and it's kind of hard to deal with, which makes it even harder to deal with from a professional level of trying to get to the level you were trying to get at from a level of envy.
Especially in music, I mean, you mentioned haters, and I would think that the motivation behind those hating most of the time is jealousy, you know, and they'll accuse successful artists of selling out. That's why they got to that level. Well, of course someone wants to be successful, and they're just jealous of it. That's why they're hating on them.
Yes. I've always thought that envy had a sort of modicum of respect in it. You know, Jeff, you had mentioned, you know, envy, sort of like you envy Michael Jordan, or we might envy somebody in the business.
Model yourself after someone.
Yeah, it's sort of like jealousy very far away, but, you know, but a better perspective.
Absolutely.
A better perspective on it. Jealousy, though, it was up close and personal. It's sort of like a knife fight.
It can get very aggressive. Jealousy is very aggressive. We've seen it take people's lives. Bottom line is that, again, it's an act that you do not, it's natural, but it's not necessary. And it all comes from the bottom line of fear that somebody's going to get something that you don't have. And although they may be jealous of you, you don't have to respond in a jealous manner. And the less you respond in a jealous manner, the less jealousy will affect you. The less it'll follow you. Mm-hmm. The less it'll come after you. Because it's kind of like putting on the invincible cloak. The less you are available to the energy of jealousy, the less the jealousy seeks a receptor. Right now, it seeks a receptor because you're vulnerable to it. You know, if you are jealous, then someone will be jealous about you. So there are people, I'm sure, in your life that you are jealous of. So when you have the jealousy in you, it's kind of a magnet to pull out the jealousy of another person, because the outside world only reflects the inside world. So you can't have jealousy in the workplace if you have no jealousy in your heart. Okay. So that's wherein lies your power, dealing with your own jealousy, which means your own frailty, your own value system. Who am I and where do I create my value from? We all have innate value. It is the divine. We are all divine. That's all there is. We're either in awareness of it or non-awareness of it, but we cannot not be it. Mm-hmm. Got it? So if you are in jealousy, you are not in awareness of your divinity. If you're not in awareness of your divinity, you are reacting, responding, and creating from a small aspect of you that's living in a small vision of your possibilities.
Absolutely.
And when you expand those possibilities, what the hell is there to be jealous about? What is there really to be envious about? We can look at somebody's space. Actually, it'll even get rid of envy. It'll look at envy and say, well, why not? I can do that. It'll go from I aspire to do that to I will do that with confidence, because that awareness becomes your reality. And it becomes your destination, and it becomes the position from which you create from and respond from, versus the small, self-identified particle of yourself where jealousy lies.
I think also a lot of people are in denial of their jealousy or in denial of their envy.
Absolutely.
That happens a lot. And one thing, and I definitely wanted to ask you about this, do you think... I was talking to some friends the other day, and we were talking about the times we're in now with the recession and everything. I think, to me, I think the thing that makes this time in our lives so much more elevated is because people are having an opportunity to take the time to think more. I'm wondering, do you think that right now with what we're going through, people don't have the same amount of money, things are just so crazy right now?
Well, it opened the can of worms.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And it opened it in order to reestablish it, and I do believe you're 100% correct, to give us an opportunity to think, reevaluate, and reassimilate. Who are we? Why are we here? What are we doing? You know, when you start taking away the things, the clothing on the outside, then you see the body underneath, and you know if you need to take a hike, right? But if you keep the clothes on the outside, you never know if you really need to go take a hike. And that's what it did. Economically, we took away the frenzy of spending, the hypnosis, the subconscious mind could no longer rest and sleep.
It's false gods.
Yes.
We talked about
false
this.
False gods. All spending is false gods.
We've encountered this before where people will say, well, I don't have any enough money to do an X, Y, or Z session, hypnosis or NLP. And then they'll turn around and go to Neiman Marcus and blow $500 mm-hmm. bucks on whatever. Cool. That's fine. There's a dualism there. There's a dualism between the inner self, your inner divinity, and an externalized false god. And that's the way I really look at. Everybody wants to look good. But when you go down that consumerism road for a long, long time, it starts to become, the thing that I'm going to get next, the thing I'm going to get next, the thing I'm going to get next. And those can start to be false gods, that we clothe ourselves in these false elements. That's all gone now. Now we have to look at ourselves.
I think that, yeah. And I have a lot of friends that are in the music industry or in business in general. And in this time that we're in right now, people losing jobs. People aren't able to travel as much. People aren't able to shop as much. So they're sitting there, and the things that they once envy, they're now jealous of mm-hmm. because it's hard for them to aspire to those levels. So it's just a train of thought that it has, resonated, and it's there that, God, I thought I could make it at that level. Well, maybe I can, and I don't have the job I had before to get
Well, they get to rethink it.
Yeah.
They can rethink it with the same crap.
Yeah.
Or they can rethink it with a larger vision.
Yeah.
So it depends upon what you do with the opportunity of the crack. You can turn on the light or you can turn off the light and become thicker with it.
Yeah.
So some people will choose to become thicker with it, going, oh, that's just another reason why I can't be whatever it is that I want to be, because now the economy doesn't let me be what I want to be. Which the economy has nothing to do with who you are to begin with. Economy starts from the inside. Your economy is created by yourself inside. What you experience about the economy will be created from the inside. So if you want to change your economical financial situation, you change it from the inside out, not the outside in. The circumstances don't run the mind runs the circumstances. So they can use that opportunity to fortify their identity that they have at the present time. I can't get where I'm going because. Or they can turn it around and say, get naked with themselves, as I call it, and honest with themselves and say, the reason why I didn't make it was me. The reason why I can make it is me.
Mm-hmm. And I think people also taking that same mind thought process in their relationships.
We did
a show on that last
last
episode was on this. When you're not flush with cash, you can't distract yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of like stripping the layers.
Right, mm-hmm. The foundation comes out.
Slack is coming off the walls.
The foundation comes out. You'll know whether or not you got cracks in your foundation. First, you have to look for self cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because if one has self cracks, you're going to have cracks within the relationship. There's no question about it. And what do I mean by cracks in oneself? Do you know who you are? Are you in touch with yourself? Who am I? Find that out first. From there, build anything and everything you want. Because we're here to express joy. You focus on the joy in any situation, the joy is going to grow. And you're right. Once the financial situation comes down, we're no longer mesmerized by the illusions that we see around us. We have to get down to the true self. And that true self can be built on, again, in denial. Or in awareness. It's a choice. That's the wonderful thing about life, the choice. The ability to go back into denial is a choice, and the ability to become aware is a choice.
Cynthia's from New Orleans, and it's funny. There's an allegory there, because some people are going back and rebuilding their houses the same way they were when they know full well that a hurricane could come tromping on through there again. That analogy, that metaphor is, you have an opportunity now, audience, everybody out there. How are you going to rebuild? Are you going to rebuild with a good foundation? Are you going to rebuild smart?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's, and I think that's really critical for people to understand.
Speaking of building, let's segue into our building blocks section right now. Building blocks for better relationships. And this week, we're talking about objective viewer. And I have no idea what you mean by that.
Objective viewer. First, let me just briefly say something about groups of people. There are three basic types of people. There are visual people, there are oral people that hear, and then there are kinesthetic people, people that feel. So with that in mind, that you might be one of these three people, you'll probably know. I tend to be a visual person. Mm-hmm. You might be, Keisha, you might be an oral person because you're in the music industry. Mm-hmm. Jeff, you might be. My wife is just a hair person.
can't figure I'm an antenna.
She's an antenna.
I use all three.
Exactly. So understanding a little bit, just sort of prefacing with who you might be, objective viewer is best described as, if everybody can just follow my instructions, just for 10 seconds, I'd like everybody just to close your eyes. Close your eyes very clean. Just take a deep breath and out. Now, whatever position you are, obviously if you're listening to this in the car, I don't want you to do this. I don't want you to close your eyes. But I'd like you to just imagine yourself in the corner of the room looking down at yourself, to see yourself sitting in the chair. This is a visual exercise. Imagine yourself floating in the corner of the room, turned around, looking down at yourself in the chair or wherever you happen to be seated comfortably. That, you can open your eyes now, that is the objective viewer, is being able to take yourself out of yourself and to look down at yourself. Another version of this is the rocking chair test, where you say, how would you handle it? Say, well, how would I handle this 15 years from now? What would my future self tell my current self? What would I tell myself? That's the ability for the objective viewer to see yourself, your behavior, your actions, your clothing, your position, your feelings, objectively.
In your advice, at what point during the day does one do this? At what point
when
in conversation?
When you have a feeling. When you have a feeling. If you start to have a feeling of jealousy, choose not to react to it right then, all right? Because reactions are a choice. We can choose not to react. We think we have to, but that's only because it's a habit. Mm-hmm. So you put a stop guard in, just like rolling down the street and they got those little speed bumps. You just put a speed bump in. Does this service me? Does what's coming out of my mouth going to service me in the next 5 minutes, 5 years? Right, so you take the speed bump, and then a little bit later on, you look at the situation, and you see it as clearly as you possibly can. You notice how you're sitting, what you're thinking. You can see the words pop out the top of your head. And then you follow those words kind of backwards and say, okay, who was the originator of this thought? Mm-hmm. It's in my head, and I'm speaking it, but who originated the thought? And once you start contacting the pieces of yourself, because we're all multiple pieces, you know, you were 12, you were 10, you'd be amazed. The energy that comes forward to give you the information about yourself is absolutely, it's just amazing. It's just ready to bubble out.
I have two thoughts on that, though, and I agree it's good advice, and I tend to subscribe to it. I become very guarded. Some people think quiet in instances because I do think, and some people think I overthink a situation before I react. Because I put my foot in my mouth one too many times, and I think it's wise to think before you speak.
I have worn peppermint shoes on many occasions.
You know, exactly. If this is in practice at all times, you're wrecking spontaneity.
If I find myself in an unresourceful position, as it's called in hypnosis, where I'm not in a good mood or I'm not in a good spot, I generally find that it's better not to do anything.
Right.
To address your spontaneity, you're only doing it in areas where your behavior is not productive for you. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing it. You're not psychoanalyzing joy. Joy is spontaneous. Go out and have all the joy you want.
So is anger.
Well, yeah, but anger's not necessarily productive.
Correct.
So joy is productive. Mm-hmm. You know, joy begets joy. You want to beget joy. It's a great feeling. Anger is not necessarily a wonderful feeling. It takes away your energy. You feel depleted. You feel depressed at the end of it. Nobody ever feels good and says, gee whiz, I'm so glad I got angry. You know, they go, oh, wow, why'd I do that again? So what I'm suggesting is utilize this process in areas where your behavior, where you're servicing your behavior's not servicing you. Your behavior should service you and your overall identity and who you want to be. And if you are serving time to your behavior, utilize the steps to become the master of the behavior, but not the master as in controlling, the master in awareness of the behavior, because the behavior originally was created with positive intent. So you go back to the positive intent, you go back to the individual that you saw when you're sitting and you're conversing with yourself and saying, who the hell's talking to me right now trying to get this verbiage out of my mouth, which I know is non-productive. And you see a 10-year-old, you see a 5-year-old, you see a 3-year-old screaming, and that's driving your car. That's driving your relationship. That's driving your commitments. That's driving your contracts. That's not a good idea. You want to go out and go to kindergarten, get a preschool, and get a 3-year-old and hand the keys to your car.
Yeah.
Well, it's you're handing your keys to your life to a 3-year-old.
And that, as an objective viewer, you can recognize as an individual that it's actually the 3-year-old that's doing the talking.
Oh yeah, they're most willing to talk. And we've all
done it. Yeah. I probably did it, 15 minutes ago. I mean, we've all done it. It's not. It's natural. And I would say that some people actually have made a living out of being angry. There's plenty of commentators on radio specifically that say outrageous and crazy and stupid things, and that's they've made a great living.
But are they angry, or are they acting
exactly
angry? There's a big difference.
Some of it could be an act. Some of it could be an act. That's true. And some of it could be rooted in truly who they are. But at the end of the day, it's who you choose to be.
Excellent advice, as always, and we've run out of time, but we can do an entire show on that, and probably will, because, John, I want to dig deeper into the three types of people, because I think I'm all three, Sybil and all of us. You've
sure
been listening to Girlfriend Relationship Radio Rebooted. I'm Jeff Newman from B2GX.com, your online listening experience. Be sure to visit CynthiaChauvin.com. That's Cynthia, CHAUVIN.com. You can download the show or subscribe to Girlfriend on iTunes. And we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening.